a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
Hey, I'm actually hosting tonight. My name is Wendy Pilot, also known as Hanaji Hihani. And on Native Roots Radio Presents, I'm Awake, we discuss Native American news and events. And as you all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. This portion of the show is brought to you by Alliant Energy, Powering Beyond. We have a great show lined up for you today. On today's show, we have Robert Lilligren. Robert is the Executive Director of Native American Community Development Institute, also known as NACDI, in Minneapolis. And later on, I'm going to be giving us some fun wolf facts. I usually do my fun facts on Friday, but I have tomorrow off, so I'm going to be doing that today. So stay with us till the end. Before we get to Ogama with the news, Ogama, yesterday Bob Blake was on, and Bob Blake gives us the solar news with the solar bear. And he was talking about having a lot of money out there, and that they're going to be putting a lot of electric charging stations all around the United States and all, you know, in Minnesota and everything. And I thought that was really exciting. And he brought up the Super Bowl a couple of times, and it got me thinking that when I watched the Super Bowl, although I didn't really watch the Super Bowl, I just watched the commercials, that there were so many electric car ads on the Super Bowl. And I just Googled it. I looked it up to see how many there were. And there was a Kia commercial. That was the Robo Dog. If anybody saw that, it was really cute. BMW, Polestar, Hyundai, General Motors, Porsche, Chevrolet, Toyota, and Nissan. They all had either a totally electric car or a hybrid in their commercials. And I just thought it was really awesome that many car companies are so excited to have their electric cars and get away from fossil fuels. But I also looked up the average cost of a 30-second Super Bowl commercial spot. Would you have any idea how much that is?
$50 million. I'll throw it out there.
$6.5 million for a 30-second spot for their commercial.
Wow, yeah, that's crazy.
It is incredible. I just wanted to bring that up because I thought it was really interesting. So let's get to Ogama with the news. This is news you will not hear anywhere else. Welcome, Ogama.
Hey, Miigwech, bonjour, everybody. I'm Ogama Ganuakwe. I'm a member of the Red Lake Nation in northern Minnesota. As always, I bring you the news here on Native Roots Radio. Just one more thing, too, on what Wendy was saying about the Super Bowl. I happened to see a little image coming through of the number of personal jet flights that took off within like 5 hours of the Super Bowl ending. And it was just streaks of bright red going across the country in several different directions. So, you know, and it was paired with the phrase, but make sure to recycle, everybody, kind of poking fun at, you know, the super wealthy are a big part of the problem that we have, a big part of the reason we have such a problem with pollution on the planet is because they can afford a private jet rather than flying in a group setting, and those types of things happen. So I really hope that those Super Bowl commercials are able to help offset by showing some of the people who can afford the electric cars that they could be very luxury things. So hopefully that helps here.
Definitely.
As always, I like to touch base on what's happening with the Stop Line 3 movement here, and we are waiting to hear some more news of water protectors who have been to court. Some water protectors had their court charges moved to tribal court, so we're still just kind of waiting to get a good wrap-up of all of that, and my cat is visiting with us today, apparently. But I also wanted to remind people that if you were part of the Line 3 movement and you have stories or art that you want to share, make sure you go over to line3anthology.org and you can submit to add to the collection. I believe everything's going to be anonymous and it will be distributed among water protectors. There's some water protectors who are putting together those things, and I think it'd be a really good way for a lot of us who were part of the movement to decompress after this summer. So again, that's line3anthology.org. Make sure to go over there if you want to submit art or writing or something of the like to the movement. And then the other thing is that they do have people on staff for this project who can help you with writing. So if you go over there, there's a contact email you can click on, and they can actually help you if you need a little help writing your story. So the other big thing is that Huber Engineered Woods is happening in northern Minnesota near the Chippewa Forest. It's set to affect 5 different reservations here in Minnesota. So make sure you're taking time to go over to protectmnforest.org to educate yourself on the dangers of this project and find out how you can help in telling Minnesota officials that this is not a project that we want in Minnesota. For news, I do have a quick bit here for local. The Midtown Phillips Neighborhood Association is inviting you to their annual meeting, which is taking place over Zoom on Tuesday, February 22nd at 6 p.m. Featured speakers include Michael Gozy, who is the CEO of the American Indian Community Development, as well as Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board Superintendent Al Bangora. They will discuss the annual report of the MPNAI's activities and projects during 2021 and talk about their partner organizations' upcoming initiatives and more. You can visit midtownphillips.org for more information and a link to the meeting. Again, that meeting is taking place on Tuesday, February 22nd at 6 p.m., and that's the Midtown Phillips Neighborhood Association annual meeting. So make sure you check that out if you are in that neighborhood in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. Big news. Is anybody following the Olympics? Wendy, have you been following the Olympics at all?
You know, off and on, I've been catching pieces, snippets of different, activities. Yeah.
Yeah, so just yesterday, I believe, on the 16th, Team Canada won gold at the Beijing Winter Olympics for hockey. And this year, there were actually 3 Indigenous women on 2 teams for hockey at the Beijing Olympics, 2 from Canada and 1 from the U.S. So Abby Rock was the star of the U.S. team, and she was from the Wanapate First Nations and grew up in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. And her achievement was the first Indigenous player on Team USA. And that was really acknowledged, but also brought a lot of expectations and attention for her. But the other 2 Indigenous women she was facing during the Olympics was Jocelyn LaRocque and Jamie Lee Rattray, which are both members of the Métis Nation and were part of the winning team from Canada's hockey gold this year. So congratulations to the Métis Nation for sending representatives to the Olympics and winning some hockey. It's exciting. I'm not usually a big hockey fan, but my own daughter started hockey this year. So I'm really, really proud to see some Indigenous women in the hockey arena to tell her about this year as it's her first year in hockey. So that's really big news. From Northern Public Radio, a quick bit here. The U.S. Senate is considering legislation that would allow the Prairie Band of Potawatomi Nation to receive a multi-million-dollar settlement for lands that were illegally auctioned almost 200 years ago. So apparently the U.S. government sold about 1,200 acres of Chief Chabonnet's land near the village of Shabona in southern DeKalb County, Illinois, when he left to visit family in Kansas. And the 4th generation great-grandson is trying to fix it. And last year, Congressman Jerry Moran introduced the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation Chabonnet Band Reservation Settlement Act, which would provide $10 million in settlement to the band in exchange for relinquishing any claims against the state. So that's really kind of an interesting thing that we get to see here in Indian country come up. So,
wow, very cool. Really appreciate that news, Ogama. Any last minute things? I think we should get my cat, Lucy, and your cat, I don't know the name, and they can have a meow off.
they could have a meow off. I think once I let her out of the room, she'll be okay. So apologies to that, everybody, today.
No apologies needed. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. We will be back after this short break with Robert Lilligren, who is the Executive Director of the Native American Community Development Institute, NACDI. That's in Minneapolis. Stay with us.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex. Recording sexual acts without permission. Hurting someone because of their sexual orientation, raping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger. Purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
This is Angela Warner with Warner Stallion. As a mother of five, believe me, I'm all about getting the best deals. I'm always looking for a way to save money without compromising on quality. I guess it runs in the family. Because at Warner Stallion, we have a team of buyers who are obsessed with getting appliance deals that no one else has. Like right now, we have thousands of appliances in stock at the best price. Then we give you an extra 5% back and fast free delivery. Put us to the test and see for yourself at our 10 Minnesota stores and at WarnerStallion.com.
Hi, I'm Claire Ferreira, president and owner of Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. Ever since my grandfather founded Standard over 90 years ago, word-of-mouth advertising and referrals from our customers have always been important. That's why, after serving over 500,000 customers, we're proud to have a 4.9-star average rating out of 5 on our online reviews. Check them out for yourself and find out more at standardheating.com. That's standardheating.com.
This is Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Awake.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
And this is Wendy Pilot. I'm the host tonight, and my name is Hanajihihani, which means cares for them. I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. So if you're listening, Curtis, thank you for that name. This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice. And now we are talking to Robert Lilligren. Robert joins us once a week, and we're always very happy to have Robert on the show. Robert is the executive director of the Native American Community Development Institute in Minneapolis, also known as NACDI. So welcome, Robert. It's always great to have you. How are you doing? Oh, I think that there is a mute button that we need
to... There we go. Bonjour.
There we go.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Good to see you, Wendy. Good to see you, Ogama. It's great to be here. Just a heads up right at first, I'm having all kinds of Wi-Fi and connectivity issues. So
okay.
If things go weird, I just want you to be prepared.
Oh, thank you for the heads up. And now that you said it, we're going to be fine.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, do you have a cat by any chance?
I do not. I have in the past, but I do not right now.
Okay, because, you know.
Why is that? Why?
Well, because Robert, when every day when Robert and I are on the show, our cat Lucy jumps in and meows throughout a segment or two. There's never, I don't think, a show that we have on the radio that she doesn't do that. And we can't keep her out because she'll just bust down the door. But Ogama's cat was also meowing tonight. And I thought it was ours that Robert, you know, had the computer on or something. But I thought maybe we could have a meow off with all our cats. So, but maybe next time.
Oh, no, I wish I had one.
Yeah.
Maybe next time. Yeah. One of my coworkers related this story of someone who was, you know, working from home and their cat was always getting between them and their computer. And ultimately, the solution, she bought a small toy computer, put it next to her laptop, and the cat would curl up around this computer and was satisfied then. The cat just wanted to be involved.
That is hilarious. You know, and that gets me to thinking.
I agree.
Okay, we might have to think of something like that. So, Robert, thank you again,
right.
always to, for being on the show. But the last time you were on the show, you were talking a little about the Falls Initiative. And I was wondering if you could give us a little bit more information. And for those people who weren't listening, maybe they need to find out about the Falls Initiative. If you could talk about that for a little bit, that'd be great.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate you asking, Wendy. And so the falls, they're in Minneapolis, right in the sort of the middle of the Central Riverfront, where, of course, Minneapolis is built on the Mississippi River. There's a former falls. It's sort of, it's been hugely desecrated and things. There's a lock and dam there now. Historically, it was a very sacred site of the Dakota people who were here. There was Spirit Island, a very sacred site right there around the falls. It was a place where women went to give birth, actually. Amongst other sort of sacred kind of activities there. Anyway, the Spirit Island is gone. It was desecrated and demolished through colonization, industrialization. The falls is kind of destroyed. There's all this heavy infrastructure there now. And the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, who owns the lock and dam, wants to get rid of it. It's the lock has been decommissioned to prevent invasive species getting up into the lakes area and things. And so there's been this years-long process about how to transfer the property around the lock and dam to the city of Minneapolis. And so about 2 years ago, NACTI, our organization, got involved working with a nonprofit called Friends of the Falls. And people could just Google that, or it's thefalls.org. is the website. And, you know, there's some of the leading people, the wealthiest people in Minneapolis that are interested in this Central Riverfront. And this Friends of the Falls organization kind of did some soul searching and decided that they really wanted to figure out a way to put Native voices in the lead on the discussion of what would happen with that property around the lock and dam. And I got to tell you, they really committed to it. And they, after about 6 months of conversation with us at NACTI, we signed a contract. We've been working with Friends of the Falls to engage Native voices. We've reached out to the four Dakota nations that are still in Minnesota, that are the descendants of the people that were here first. We've engaged the nations. We've engaged local Native residents and cultural carriers, water activists, and it's just been this tremendous process. We have what's called a Native Partnership Council that's kind of leading these conversations. Well, on Tuesday, so 2 days ago, we had our first broader community conversation, facilitated a panel discussion with people like Juanita Espinoza, you may know, O'Kenyon LaPointe, Jewel Arkerin, and Karen Diver were on the panel. So just these big brain people, you know, nationally recognized leaders in their fields. And it was for a very broad audience. There were maybe 200 people that attended online, and just really started with sort of the Native stories, acknowledging and recognizing the rights of water, and just trying to frame this conversation differently than these kinds of complicated projects usually go.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, the Friends of the Falls, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that they were the group who are fighting to give the Mississippi River personhood.
Emily, I'm not hearing you, so I don't know if that's me or if that's
you.
Oh,
okay. I'm not sure if Ogama can hear me or not.
I can hear you, Wendy. It looks like Robert's coming a little bit in and out, which he said may happen a little bit tonight.
Yeah, okay.
Which is okay. I just let the station know to maybe try to get him on by phone tonight. Mm-hmm. But I find this really interesting because I'm a member of the Lakes area in northern Minnesota, or north central Minnesota, I should say. So the falls is not a place I'm super familiar with. So it's really, really interesting to me to find out kind of what's happening with this, because it's not something that would be likely to happen up here where I live, where a community mm-hmm. would really put a Native voice first. So I'm really excited to hear that the city is so committed to working with Native communities and Native voices to try to restore and figure out what's best to be done with the sacred place.
Yeah, and it is a beautiful area. It's over by the Stone Arch Bridge in Minneapolis. Correct. And it's a really nice area where people come to visit. It's a tourist attraction. People who come to Minnesota or Minneapolis will go there to visit. Are you back with us, Robert? There you are. Fantastic. Okay.
Good. Okay. Yeah. Lots of technical stuff going on. But it's great to
see you. We might have. Yeah. Your audio is clicking really bad. I think we're going to have the station give you a call. So maybe we could do it by telephone. That might be best. So hold on for that telephone call. And then in the meantime,
open. All right.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, you know, there's some times when there's just technical difficulties that's, you know, above and beyond our control. We're having a storm here tonight in on Long Island, mostly where I am, especially Long Beach, New York. And Long Beach is a barrier island. So it is it's an island, and it's, you know, it's there. It takes the brunt of every storm. And it is a beautiful area, though. But as I was more inland today, you know, watching my 3-month-old niece, as I've been doing for the past 3 weeks, she's inland more. It's about a 20-minute ride inland. I was driving closer back to Long Beach. And as I'm driving, my GPS is saying, you were nearing a storm zone. Please proceed with caution. And it just was getting foggier and foggier and foggier as I got here. So
I'm so glad you made it back, because that's always really
scary.
Then
I worry about like the internet and my lights and my electric, and you know, mm-hmm. because they said there could be damage. I do have my flashlights ready just in case, so you might be losing me tonight too. Yep. Ogama, you're gonna be all on your own.
I think we'll make it work. We got Robert back, so
fantastic.
Patrick. Great. At the station for getting Robert back for us. We appreciate that.
Hey, Robert.
Yeah,
how's it going?
Thanks, everyone. Sorry for the trouble.
No problem. No trouble at all. But go ahead and finish up what you were talking about. What I was saying, and you couldn't hear me, was that this organization, Friends of the Falls, I'm pretty sure that they've been fighting to give the Mississippi River a personhood. Have you heard anything about that, or give the river?
Yeah, well, it's something that's come up just recently, especially from the involvement of our Native Partnership Council, that the idea of the rights of water here.
Right. So you know what? Maybe when we come back after this break, we will finish talking about that. And we really want to talk about the opening of the Stephen Primo show also. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Yeah. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. I'm Wendy, your host tonight. Robert will be back tomorrow. And stay with us. We'll be right back after this short message.
Navigating COVID while protecting yourself can be difficult. Fortunately, there's a hotline you can call with any questions. The Department of Indian Work St. Paul partnered with the Minnesota Department of Health to open the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline. They provide information on vaccines, booster shots, and testing sites. Right now, booster shots are available to anyone over the age of 18 for those who are eligible. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline can also help with housing, food, medical, and educational support. If you or someone you know has questions about COVID-19, vaccinations, booster shots, or testing, please call 651-304-9986. Again, the number is 651-304-9986. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline is open for calls Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline at 651-304-9986.
Life is a journey, and the Doherty Family College will help you get where you want to go. Located downtown Minneapolis, this affordable two-year college provides free textbooks, a laptop, meals, career coaches, one-on-one mentorship, and a Metro Transit Pass, making DFC the perfect pathway to a bachelor's degree. Turn your dreams into reality. Connect with a counselor today at dfc.stthomas.edu.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me, Wen. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Hey man, are you going to the vaccination party after school?
True that.
What are you guys talking about? What party?
Oh hey, there's gonna be a party soon for anyone who's vaccinated. A lot of people are gonna be there. Bro, you should definitely go get vaccinated. It's like a shield against COVID.
I don't know, I'm not so sure.
Do us a favor and get vaccinated, bruh. We'll even go with
you. Come on, it's gonna be all good. Once you get vaccinated, we can go to the party together.
This message is brought to you by Migzi Communications and Minnesota Department of Health.
Stay healthy this winter by protecting yourself, your family, and your community from COVID-19. Get a vaccine or booster. COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective, and free, and approved for everyone over the age of 5. Wear a mask outdoors in crowds and indoor settings, and lay low or get tested before visiting family and friends or attending events. To get more tips, schedule your vaccine, or get tested, visit ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine. That's ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine. With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lulia. Cloudy tonight with a low of 3 below, then a chance of snow and freezing drizzle on Friday with a high of 32.
This is Angela Warner with Warner Stallion. If you've got a broken appliance or one you wish would break, don't settle for poor selection and don't pay a penny more than you should. Warner Stallion has thousands of in-stock appliances, plus save an extra 5%. Shop now at WarnerStallion.com.
Hi, Minnesota. This is Tom Hartman. Join me every weekday from 11 to 2 for in-depth analysis of what's happening in politics today on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Bijou, I am Oshawashko Gijig. I'm from Red Lake Nation, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Hey, this is Wendy Pilot. I'm with Ogama tonight, and we are with Robert Lilligren. Robert is the Executive Director of the Native American Community Development Institute, Minneapolis, NACDI. This portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition. Welcome back, Robert. I'm so happy your internet came back.
Yeah, I'm on Wi-Fi and all. So that's great. Thanks for your patience. Yeah.
No problem. Those things happen. So we'll see what happens. Yeah, so before we went to break, we were talking about the Mississippi River and personhood, and then right. I wanted you to let our audience know about an art show opening for Stephen Primo?
Yes, Stephen Primo, Steve Primo. Tonight is the opening reception. Actually, it's happening right now.
Nice.
It's been a little pared back because of COVID. There's appointments, you know, so they're timed. But there'll be more events throughout the show, including an event that the Mille Lacs Band is sponsoring for us. So I don't know how familiar you might be with Stephen Primo, but he has had quite a prolific career, and this show is called Avenues of Creation. It's at our gallery on East Franklin on the American Indian Cultural Corridor, so at All My Relations Arts Gallery. And what amazes me when you look at this work, it's a stunning show. I mean, just stunning. I would really encourage anyone in the Twin Cities area that's going to get here to stop in and see it. But you know, for as high profile as Stephen Primo is, for as long as his career has been, this is his first solo show in the metro area of his career. So it's kind of a big deal. And, oh, great. Yeah, so there's the graphic for the show. And, he's done just tons of work, illustrations, public art. I think most people in this area are familiar with him. And so it's just a thrill to be hosting him for his first show. And he's really supported by his tribe, which is great. And so Mille Lacs supports him. And they'll be sponsoring an artist event later in the run. So it opened on Monday, Valentine's Day, runs through April 16th.
Wow, beautiful, beautiful work. I love any type of arts, whether it's, you know, poetry, paintings, you know, beadwork, everything. It's really, really spectacular. That's really great. I love to hear that. Great. That's fantastic. What else you got going on? I know we were talking about some redistricting with Mr. Peltier. What would you like to talk about as far as redistricting goes?
Well, we're still kind of processing that, right? So the maps are just kind of coming down now. Thanks. So if you look, the 8th district now has all of the tribes in northern Minnesota within one district. And that is the first time that this has happened, or at least as far as I can remember. And so, you know, I've already been texting all my friends. Ogama, we'll have to talk as well to figure out what this means and how we can either run a Native candidate up in 8 or make sure that the Native vote is appreciated up in 8, because that's significant.
Right. Yeah, well, we talked to Ernest Peltier, Opgar Peltier, yesterday, and he was explaining that if this map is accepted, it would actually move him into the 8th district. So he would be the Native, would be a candidate for Congress in the 8th district, which would be great because, I mean, personally, I'm really, really looking forward to maybe not being under the thumb of Representative Stauber in this area, personally, as somebody who's part of District 8. But it is definitely big news for Indian country, and I don't know, some of us may have mixed feelings about it, but I know there's all over social media, Native people all across Minnesota are like, they're not going to know what hit them when we all start going and voting in this area,
right?
Because 8 has been District 8. And so for those of you who aren't familiar with Minnesota, District 8 is traditionally, or on the previous map, which unfortunately I don't have in front of me, but I do have the new proposed map up on the screen here.
Yep.
It already encompassed a good portion of the reservations in Minnesota.
Right.
I believe it included Mille Lacs, Fond du Lac, Boys Fort, and I think it was Leech Lake as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it left out White Earth, Red Lake Nation, and one other, and I apologize, I should know this, but I don't offhand. But to put us all together could give us a lot of collective bargaining power.
Agreed.
would be really great. But what worries me is there's been, you know, especially with the Line 3 project here in Minnesota, the Fond du Lac Nation was actually supportive of the Line 3 project and benefited right. from it, which was their choice as a nation. But many of the other nations in Minnesota were against that. And the state kind of exploited the Fond du Lac tribe's right. Support of that as their native consultation on the project, even though they didn't consult with the other tribes. So my personal worry is whether or not we may still get used in that same way by the state or by politicians, especially like Governor Walz with his initial promise not to put Line 3 through and getting the Native vote and coming back out afterwards. So, you know, I think there's good and bad for this.
Agree. And I think that's very wise interpretation about the risks here, right? And of course, those risks are there whether we're all the tribes are in one congressional district or not. And so that's kind of up to us, right, to figure that kind of internal stuff out. And I don't know that that's happened fully yet. But I am super excited, especially with the current Congressman Stauber. I just have never – I'm not seeing him in sort of the debates around Native issues and things, whereas – you know, with former Congressman Obestar, I think he was fairly present in the conversations. And I remember going out to his office when I was newly elected to the Minneapolis City Council and we're visiting with the Minnesota representatives out in D.C. And I go into his office and there's all this just beadwork and, you know, all these other sort of artifacts and things in his office. And it really hit me. I was like, oh, this feels really nice to be sitting in a congressman's office in D.C. and see these familiar cultural pieces. It felt really good, you know. So, and that's just a small part of how representation matters. But with this upcoming election, with these new districts, I think it's really an opportunity for Native folks to organize. Our organization, NACDI, has our Make Voting a Tradition. You know, over the last year, we've been expanding it to be statewide. We have what we call our statewide table. You know, we're working through the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. We'll be presenting there this month, I think, or maybe next month, to sort of start getting more collaboration, cooperation, synergy going between the metro, the reservations, to make sure that we're turning everyone out. And in this day and age, when elections are won by very, very narrow margins, the Native vote can be that margin, right? I mean, it's not a huge number, but it's enough. It's enough to swing an election. And so it's time to start flexing that muscle, using that political power constructively, demanding that candidates don't just show up when they need our votes, but show up and are engaged with our communities and on our issues year-round, not just at election time. And so I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to see what happens with these new maps.
Is there anything, Robert or Ogama, that you could think of that would be negative about this districting, redistricting?
Well, I think Ogama was hitting on some of the risks, you know, dividing, right? You can divide within the district, and so it's important for the community to not let that happen. Mm-hmm. You know, there's sort of these sayings within redistricting, you know, pack 'em and stack 'em, you know, mm-hmm. and so some people feel that if you put a lot of like-minded voters within a district, you might be diluting them. They may have more say if we were split between multiple districts, but I'm interested in seeing, just because I haven't seen it before. I'm interested in seeing what the might of the Native vote's going to be now that all the tribes are, or all of the Ojibwe tribes are all within one district.
Wow. Do you think that all of the tribes in the Ojibwe area all have like minds, or do people, you know, sway one way or the other, like in my own family?
And I'd love to hear what Ogama has to say, because she's up there. But as she was saying, you know, the tribe separated on the Line 3 issue, you know, so there isn't always uniformity of position. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear Ogama's take on it, though, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think there's definitely a lot of similarities. A lot of us are, you know, interested in treaty rights recognition and, you know, our voices and those kinds of things being heard. But everybody's voice is different. You know, it's kind of one of those things that people make this assumption that because we're Native American, we all are of the same opinion mm-hmm. or we all believe the same things. And that's really just not the case. There's just as many varying positions and viewpoints in Indian country, even on a single reservation or within a single community or even within a single family, as there are in many other types of families. So I think that that's really beautiful that we have that in within Native people, but it's also, you know, we don't want to be seen or be abused by that narrow-minded idea that we all believe the same thing, or that because one tribe is supporting or against something that the rest of us are. And I think that's really the negative downside that I could see, is that could mm-hmm. happen. I really hope it doesn't.
Right. I think that's right on, Ogama, and that is a risk. And it amazes me just if you look nationally, the range of political party affiliation, even within Native people. And, you know, there are plenty of Native, you know, far-right Republican types. And, you know, and it kind of surprises me coming from Minneapolis, where we're all, you know, happy progressives together. But there is a huge range. And Minnesota is one of those states where the Native vote can swing elections. We're one of 7 states nationally where there's enough votes in the Native community. So it behooves us to try to work together.
It does. It absolutely does. And I hope we're able to get that synergy you're talking about between the rural and the metro Native Americans throughout Minnesota too, year-round as well, not just at election time.
Yeah, one of the things we've run into is a project that's been funded to get metro people engaged in their tribal elections. So we're all putting all that together and finding even more synergy, more of a network. So I'm hopeful.
That's great. Thank you so much, Robert. It's always great to see you. And thanks for joining us tonight. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. That was Robert Lilligren, Executive Director of the Native American Community Development Institute, NACDI, from Minneapolis. Thank you. We'll be back after this short break.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Children's Minnesota raises up children's health by raising the standards, hands, voices, the bar, the stakes, the questions, and the curtain on raising kids' health to the highest priority. With the most pediatric experts in the Upper Midwest, we're setting the stage because kids need us, all of us. So let's raise them up so every kid can reach their best health. Children's Minnesota, the kid experts.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Hi, I'm Anna, and I'm 8 years old, and I'm getting my COVID vaccine. If you're between 5 and 11 years old, you can get vaccinated too. Getting the jab might seem a little scary, but there is lots of good reasons to do it. You'll be protected from COVID, and you'll be less likely to spread it to people like family and friends. Have your parents find a vaccination site by calling 651-304-9986 or visit vaccineconnector.mn.gov.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This is Wendy Pilot, and this portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl!
Thanks for joining me in that howl, Ogama. I appreciate it. Usually there's at least three of us, so I think we did it okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Hana Jihihani. As I mentioned before, that means cares for them, and I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. So, Curtis, if you're listening, thank you as always. I am a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. Usually on Fridays, I do a Fun Fact Friday, but it's Thursday, and I'm off tomorrow, so I'm going to bring that to you today. And since I've been talking about wolves all week, really happy that they have been re-listed on the endangered species list, really happy about that. Kind of still upset that there are certain areas that they're not protected that we're still working on, but hopefully that will happen sometime soon. I just decided to give you some fun facts about wolves, and some of them we've talked about before, but it's always a good reminder, and some of them were new to me, so we're going to get started. Yes, and I love people listening and watching us on Facebook. I love the pictures that we're able to post for people. But here's a question for you, Ogama. I was surprised to learn this, but on average, gray wolves will eat how many pounds of meat in one meal, do you think?
In one meal,
how many pounds?
Can I have a hint on how often they eat meals?
Well, I'll put this to you. But they also have been known to go up to 14 days between meals with no ill effects.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go maybe 9 pounds.
9 pounds. Okay. So on average, gray wolves will eat 20 to 30 pounds of meat in one meal. So that's quite a lot of meat. And it's probably because sometimes they do go for a very long time without, you know, eating. And for people who are carnivores out there, meat, if you eat meat, it just sits in your gut and rots over days and days and days slowly until you digest it. And that's why you always feel full when you eat the meat. It's not the protein. I just had to kind of give that. I'm sorry about that, but
that's okay. We could take a minute. I wonder if wolves get the meat sweats. You know, like they joke about you get meat sweats if you eat too much meat. I wonder if wolves get that.
You know what? Their intestines is a lot different than ours, so probably not. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I haven't had meat sweats in many years, but there are 5 subspecies of gray wolves in North America, and their coat colors range from pure white, and that's the wolf that we pop on the screen when we say howling for wolves, to brown, gray, and cinnamon. I don't think I've ever seen a cinnamon color wolf, and black wolves. Yeah, so yeah, I love that. So wolves can run up to how many miles per hour do you think a wolf can run up to how many miles per hour?
I'm going to go with 24.
They could run up to between 31 and 37 miles per hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're pretty fast runners. I was thinking around 24 miles an hour also, around that range. But, yeah, they can go up to 37 miles an hour. They'll travel for really long distances by trotting at about 5 miles per hour. But if a wolf lives in captivity, they live a certain amount of years, or they can live up to a certain amount of years. But in the wild, they live a different amount of years. Do you think that you have any clue about how long a wolf would live in captivity versus the wild?
I would think that they would live probably a little bit longer in captivity, only because we just recently got them relisted, and they were probably in danger from being hunted by humans before that.
Yeah.
So in captivity, I don't know, I would say maybe 15 years, and maybe in the wild, 10 years?
Really close. So in captivity, up to 16 years. You were right on the money. And in the wild, 14 years. So, yeah, they live really, you know, like our average dog life, you know, lives. So, yeah. They have 4 toes with claws on them with an oval shape. The claws are oval shape. Wolves mate for life, but unless one of the partners gets killed, they will find another mate. But if not, they stay together for life, which I think is very endearing about these animals. A litter of wolves or pups is usually about 4 to 6 pups. That's how many they'll have. The pups are born deaf and blind with bright blue eyes. And they are really very needy, up to 10 months old. They need to really, really be very well cared for. A pack of wolves can range anywhere from 2 wolves, because it only takes 2 wolves to be a pack, to 30. It's very unusual to see packs of 30 wolves these days because, you know, they've been so devastated by people. But on average, females weigh a certain amount and males weigh a certain amount. Do you think you'd know, like, the largest size of a female wolf versus the largest size of a male wolf?
I'm going to go maybe 150 pounds for a female and, like, 170 pounds for a male. Oh, Wendy, it looks like you're on mute.
Yeah, sorry about that. I had a cough, so I put myself on mute really quick. But an average weight of a female ranges between 60 and 80 pounds, and males run between 70 and 110 pounds. And I'm sure that there's variations depending on what kind of wolf and where they live. Generally speaking, wolves are larger in the northern states of the United States, and they're smaller in the southern states of the United States. Pack territory size, 25 to 150 square miles in Minnesota, but their territory size increases to 300 to 1,000 in Alaska and Canada, probably just because there's more land out there. I don't know. I'm going to try to say this word. I looked it up before because I didn't know what it meant. Their common food is ungulates. Do you know what an ungulate is? I had to go look it up. We have 2 minutes left.
You know, I don't know. I would imagine is it similar to like entrails or something?
Yeah, so their common food is ungulates, which is an animal having hooves.
Hooves.
Yeah, so that's their main food.
Yeah, that was not what I was guessing at
all.
Well,
we both learned a new word, ungulate. Average paw size is 4 inches wide by 5 inches long. I mentioned this one other time. They have 42 teeth. Yep, I love the pictures that you're putting up. And breeding season is February to March. A gestation period, guess how long a female wolf is pregnant for?
Oh, I should probably know more about this considering I'm coming to the end of my own pregnancy.
Fours is a lot shorter. I'll just
going
to
say,
is
it like 4 months maybe?
63 days.
63 days. Okay, that's much shorter than mine. I envy them.
And, yeah, 2 months and another day. Okay. Their main threats to survival loss is habitat loss due to destruction, development, and encroachment by humans and persecution by humans.
Wow. Yeah, you know, that doesn't surprise me at all and breaks my heart.
Exactly. Everybody, I won't be here tomorrow, so have a great weekend. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Thank you, Robert Lilligren. Thank you so much, Ogama. I appreciate all your help. Free Leonard Peltier, stop line 3. Please get vaccinated and boosted.